You're a little older and a lot wiser. The future is yours. Define aging on your own terms. Welcome to AARP Without Limits with your host, Mike Olander.
Hello and welcome. This is AARP Without Limits. WPTF Talk Radio, we are disrupting aging with the power of 50,000 watts. And our podcast available anytime on demand at WPTF.com or through our Facebook, AARP North Carolina. I'm your host, Mike Olander of AARP North Carolina. And we have a really, really great show for you today, folks. Brian Lewis of New Frame Lobbying, noted commentator and host of the popular podcast, Do Politics Better, is back with us on the show today to talk about how North Carolina fared during this general election and what the next couple of years might look like in our state. But before we get to Brian, ladies and gentlemen, as always, I am joined here in the studio by my partner in crime, esteemed production engineer here at Curtis Media, Mr. Jason Kong. Jason, how are you, sir?
I'm great, Mike. Excited for the show. Brian, three-time guest. That is elite.
That's
elite,
right.
Elite category of guest here on AARP Without Limits.
That's right. Among his many distinctions and talents is being a repeated guest here on AARP Without Limits. So we're delighted to have him in the studio with us because there's really nobody better here in our area to crunch what happened, crunch the numbers and give some analysis as to what the election means for our state and how things are going to likely to look for the state legislatures and others here in the years to come. But I have a couple reflections, Jason, before we get into some of the specifics with Brian and getting into what are some of his takeaways. I wanted to share with you a couple of my, shall we say, unconventional or atypical takeaways from wrapping up an election season in a battleground state such as North Carolina. And just remember, folks, at the time, or just so you all know, folks, at the time that we're recording this, you know, it's a pre-recorded program. It's Thursday. It's 2 days after the election. So there is some numbers that are still being finalized, and there's a lot of analysis yet to be done on North Carolina. You know, generally at this point, we know that Donald Trump carried our state by about 3 or 4 points. So pretty, you know, still very competitive, definitely within that margin of error, not too big of a surprise there. But there were just, you know, as I look back now and not missing at all any of the political ads that have been running, Jason, I know you guys here at the Curtis Media love it because you guys get to rack in some of the advertising dollars, I'm sure. But, you know, it's nice to be able to turn on the TV and the radio and not be bombarded with ads. But I have a couple of takeaways. And some things that stand out to me that are really, really important include, number one, how important it is to understand the world that we're living in and to get out of your bubble. And, you know, media, the new media that we have now is fantastic. You know, you go on your phone, you can get an update on basically anything that's going on around the world instantly. But it's so easy because things are so micro-targeted and these algorithms that are used, it's so easy to fall into a bubble. And I know there are, you know, as people are looking back on the election, there are people who are very surprised, whether they're happy with the result or unhappy with the result, very surprised. And I think a lot of that is due to the bubbles that we sometimes inadvertently put ourselves into. And so, number one, understand the world we live in. Get out of your bubble. That can only help you better understand the world that we exist in. Number two, understand that many of the old rules that have guided elections and how we think about elections don't apply anymore. Donald Trump, elected the second time, not a polished candidate, right? Kind of the day of the you need to, you know, you can't cross over that line or else you're out. Those days are long gone. New media versus the legacy media, things like podcasts. Like, who ever thought that a podcast featuring a UFC commentator would become so big, so influential, right? And formats like that are really changing the way people get their information. Another thing, voter turnout, right? Sort of one of the things that maybe we can ask Brian about, but, you know, the old school door knocking grassroots organizing approach versus using new media and using these other tools that, you know, I'm not even all familiar with yet, really, really changing the dynamic. And during as the election was going on, you heard a lot of criticisms about, you know, the Harris campaign having a big ground game and what that was going to produce, versus using some of these other more digital tools. And it was pretty fascinating just looking at it as an objective observer to see how different the landscape has changed and what we can expect in future elections. The last point I want to make, Jason, is a really, really important one and probably the most important one. Make a point. We all know Thanksgiving is coming up soon, and most of us, many of us, are going to have an opportunity to be connecting with family and with friends. And it is such a sad thing that we have seen in the last 10 years, really, where people have gotten so divided where they don't even talk to family members anymore. Or maybe they do, but they just can't get into politics. And, you know, it's everywhere. It's hard to avoid talking about it. And it's a strain that shouldn't be there. This Thanksgiving, folks, I'd like to challenge everybody listening to do this. Try to make a point to make this Thanksgiving one where you have an opportunity to reset the relationships that you have if they are strained. You know, don't be afraid to, you know, say to your cousin or your uncle or your dad or whoever it is to say, help me understand this. Help me understand your attraction to this candidate. Tell me something I don't know, like Chris Matthews used to say on his Sunday talk show he used to do, right? Tell me something I don't know. What am I missing? You know, and try to the best of your ability, approach it with a real sense of curiosity and try to better understand the world, because, you know, the American people have spoken, you know, and people need to, they can be upset about it, they can be happy about it, but we learn a lot from elections, where people are at and what their feelings are, what their hopes are, what they're angry about, what they're happy about. And we should never let that interfere with the relationships with the people who we care about most, because that's the most important thing in the world, right, is the relationships we have with the people who we care about and how we treat people. And we never want to get things like political issues and a lot of these, you know, digitally created feuds to disrupt those things that are truly the most important in life. So I'll get off my soapbox there. I want to reintroduce back onto the program, Brian Lewis. He's a managing partner of the Raleigh-based lobbying firm New Frame here in Raleigh. He's also a political commentator in high demand right now, just post the election. So we're especially honored to have him with us. And he's host of the podcast Do Politics Better, which I want to plug because it's a really, really great format. Him and Sky do a really fantastic job of hosting the program and having great guests on and really get to hear personal stories of the movers and shakers in our political world here in North Carolina. Brian, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Michael. Thanks, Jason. It's good to be with both of you. My third time, I think I should get like the SNL jacket, you know, when they're on five times, they get the purple lounge jacket, you know, balloons from the ceiling.
Something. We got to figure something out here creative for him, Jason. First question I got to ask. It seems like it was such a long year. We've had so much that's happened, everything from a competitive gubernatorial race. I remember when Robinson was tracking ahead of Stein in those early polls and how that's changed. Yeah. The introduction, of course, of Kamala Harris after Biden stepped down. A huge hurricane that hit that disrupted the voting process and changes that the state legislature had to approve. And then here we are now with our results. So first question, are you ready to be bored for a little while after such a year? And what's your take on how the year went?
I am for let's make boring fun again. I am all for boring. My take on the election is really how fundamental the results are. It's not going to be the flashiest explanation I have, but here it is. Trump won because he is an agent of change, and the American electorate out there wanted change. We have never reelected a president who has approval numbers as low as Joe Biden. And you're saying, well, Joe Biden wasn't on the ticket this year. That is technically true, but his vice president was. And I think it was a hump that Vice President Harris just could not overcome. People are so concerned about inflation, although the numbers are getting better. The economy's getting better. People are concerned about the wars. We have wars waging in two theaters right now, Ukraine and in the Middle East. And again, you could say, well, that has nothing to do with Biden. Well, the electorate sees it differently, especially when you go back to 2016 to 2020. They were like, hey, we really weren't in any conflicts. Inflation was good. And I think there, you know, a lot of folks, there was a distaste for the incoming president. President Trump uses language, I think, that makes many of us feel uncomfortable. But I think they saw, you know what, let's just give that a try one more time. I don't think there's this President Trump is wonderful. But I think they do say President Trump represents change. We need change. Let's vote for change.
Mm. Yeah, I agree completely with what you said there. There's the thing you mentioned before with Harris, obviously vice president. She's part of the current administration, yeah. So not a true incumbent in that traditional sense, but tied there. And 107 days of a campaign, was it, for her?
Yeah.
So the fact
impressive
that—
Impressive campaign.
Yeah, I mean, you got to say, and again, you know, we're, just to be clear here, AARP does not have a PAC. We don't endorse candidates, sure, or give money to campaigns or PACs. But just as from an objective look from the outside, as you look at, you know, as a personal political junkie who's just a fan of the game more than anything else, very impressive to see it so competitive. And right now, you know, results are still being fine-tuned, but about a 3-4% victory for President Trump.
Yeah.
In that context, very remarkable. Says a lot about our state, which we're going to get into after this commercial break. You're listening to AARP Without Limits. We'll be right back. And we are back. This is AARP Without Limits. Just a reminder, folks, we always love to hear from you. If you have a question, a comment, a recommendation, or a suggestion for a future guest or topic, please feel free to reach out to us at AARP Without Limits at AARP.org. We have been speaking today with Brian Lewis. He is of the lobbying firm New Frame. He's a political commentator and host of the podcast Do Politics Better. And we were just talking, Brian, about sort of the basics, at least at the presidential level, with the general election we just experienced. What are some other things about the election that stood out to you? Were there any surprises, especially the down ballot or the Council of State races?
Really thought that Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, I thought he was going to make a better run, even despite the scandal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was 14 points at the moment he conceded to Josh Stein. You know, watching the votes come in for Trump, I thought, well, certainly people can maybe be a little forgiving of Robinson's problems, but they weren't. They voted for Trump, then went over and said, yeah, Stein's my guy, a progressive Democrat,
mm-hmm,
and then made, I believe, the Attorney General, Dan Bishop, that race against Jeff Jackson, made him pay for kind of aligning with Mark Robinson,
mm-hmm,
and then went down and they made Hal Weatherman, who was running for lieutenant governor as a Republican, made him pay. So Rachel Hunt, the Democrat, won. I was surprised by that. Then you go down, and Luke Farley, you probably haven't heard that name. He didn't really campaign in the way we saw governors and attorney general candidates campaign. In fact, he even to get to the point to be on the ballot, he had to beat a sitting legislator. Luke Farley has never run for office. Michael, here's the thing. He was one of the top vote getters in North Carolina. He is your next labor commissioner. And his slogan was this: make elevators great again. People loved it. They mm-hmm voted for him. And he must have gotten Democratic votes as well, looking at his numbers. Down at the General Assembly, I was surprised to see that Tricia Cotham, Representative Tricia Cotham, mm-hmm, she switched parties,
yeah,
from Democrat to Republican, and infuriated.
Gave them the supermajority last
goodness
year.
Yeah. Democrats wanted her head.
Yeah.
Republicans protected her. They put about $1 million into that campaign, and she won by about 300 votes. The other thing about Mecklenburg County, I talked to Democrats about it. I was like, how did you guys lose this? And they just said, look, Mecklenburg County Democrats did not show up to vote at the same rate as the rest of the state. The rest of the state was at about 78% turnout, 75, depending on the area. Down in Mecklenburg County, it was around 67%. So Mecklenburg County has some problems, I think, getting out the vote. I don't know what it is. It's a border county. It's an urban county. It's the great state of Mecklenburg to some. So that was surprising to me.
Yeah, I was a bit surprised by that, too. I saw on one of the cable news channels they were interviewing the GOTV effort for the Dems in Mecklenburg County, and they were talking about how things were going to be different this year, and they really weren't.
They improved slightly, but not at a great clip.
Yeah, not what we would expect for sure. Looking ahead, Brian, I'm interested to get your take, specifically what you expect the dynamics to be like with governor-elect, soon-to-be governor, Josh Stein, working with the state legislature. Because as AG, attorney general, he hasn't really engaged much. And, of course, the Stein family has got a big reputation in the state with his father's law firm and working on criminal justice issues, you know, years ago and all that. Don't know how much of that of a factor that is in the dynamics with certain members of the state legislature. What's your take and what are your expectations?
I'm kind of optimistic about this, Michael. I believe that Attorney General Stein, our next governor, people may not know this, but he served in the North Carolina Senate from 2008 to 2016. And so he's worked with Phil Berger and Bill Rabin and the House. And, you know, he was in the minority, so he didn't get a lot done, but he knows their style of leadership and how they legislate. I think that he's going to take a different tack than Governor Cooper, who came from the back in an era when I think we were more deferential to governors because they were of the same party. I believe that our next governor, Governor Stein, Governor-elect Stein, is going to have a different tact. I hope he has a different tact. Mm-hmm. And I hope that the General Assembly responds in kind, because I think there are a lot of things they agree on. Governor-elect Stein ran on making trades a part of our educational system, bringing back apprenticeships. That's something that the General Assembly's been talking about for the last decade as well. I think there's common ground there. They're going to have disagreements over social issues, but I think not having a supermajority in the House, which seems to be the case, it's not final yet. We'll know in the next couple weeks whether that's final or not. I think that the General Assembly is not going to push a lot of social issues, knowing that that veto is there. But look for about five centrist Democrats, Garland Pierce, Carla Cunningham, Shelley Willingham, a few others. Look for them to be deal makers in the General Assembly. They did it last session. They did it the session before. I think they're going to continue to do it. These are the guys that are going to go to Republicans and say, hey, I can vote for your bill if you do this. I can vote for that if you take this out. How does a Governor-elect Stein use those centrist Democrats to be deal makers for him? That's another question. I think he would be wise to use them.
Great insights. And just so you all know, too, we've extended the invite to Governor-elect to return to the program. He's been with us a couple of times as Attorney General. You mentioned Governor Cooper. What do you think's next for him?
I think Governor Cooper is going to be your nominee for the Democratic Party in 2026 to challenge Tom Tillis. And I think Tillis doesn't have a clear road to his nomination. He's kind of a centrist up in D.C., or he's positioned himself in that way. But Governor Cooper, I believe, is going to throw his hat in the ring in 2026. We have an open seat, or it's not an open seat. It'll be Tom Tillis up for reelection. Theoretically, this is kind of a political science 101, but the party not in power in the interim elections usually has the wind to their back. And one thing we can say about this election is Democrats are clearly out of power. They do not have the White House. They do not have the U.S. Senate. And they do not have the U.S. House. They also do not have the U.S. Supreme Court. Look for 2026 to be the Empire Strikes Back, if you will, to use a Star Wars metaphor. Look for the Empire to strike back.
Representative Lowry, up-and-coming, Republican member of the House, spoke at the RNC convention this summer. Speaker Moore is heading to Congress. Jeff Jackson, big TikToker, is going to be our new Attorney General. And, of course, AG has been the path to the governor's mansion for some. Tillis, you mentioned before. I guess we'll be probably hearing from him, assuming he's running for re-election, but you never know. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on some of these leaders, and who are maybe some other up-and-comers who you've got your eye on?
Keep an eye on new Speaker of the House, Destin Hall. Mm-hmm. He's going to be the leader of the House. He's already been on TV, had a press conference yesterday. Look for him to make a move when Congresswoman Virginia Fox, who is well into her 70s mm-hmm. now and been rumored to kind of be eyeing the exit door at Congress, look for him to be the next legislator to make a move to Congress in the next 2 to 4 to 6 years. There are also some others like Senator Ralph Heiss, who will be looking at this seat, mm-hmm. former Senator Deanna Ballard. But I believe that's your next guy or legislator who says, I'm going to try for the major leagues now. I've been here in this minor league system here, been legislating. I'm going to make a move. And most of our members of Congress, this is kind of interesting, most of our members of Congress, Deborah Ross, Valerie Fushi, Don Davis, now Tim Moore, started in the General Assembly. I'd keep an eye on Destin Hall.
In the last minute, I got to ask you about the AG race a little bit, because that was such a colorful race. Two sitting members of Congress from Charlotte area, both really good, smart, sharp, and it wound up, even though the association, you mentioned before, the association with Robinson, but also with Trump, who took the state. What's your take on that real quickly?
Yeah, I think that Dan Bishop paid the price for telling folks he wanted to be Mark Robinson's sidekick. I think that came back to get him, and that's a negative on that I will underscore. But I also want to underscore the positive, and that is Jeff Jackson, whether you agree with him or disagree with him, he really used social media in such a way to resonate mm-hmm. with North Carolina voters. I've had so many people come up to me because they know I'm a lobbyist, and they'll say, do you know that Jeff Jackson? He seems like such a great guy. He explains to me what's going on in Congress in a way that I can understand it. And if you look at those videos, it's masterful in mm-hmm. its simplicity.
Right, right.
You know, he speaks to people on their level. And I'm going to say this. Donald Trump also speaks to folks mm-hmm. on their level. Might not like the words he uses, but you kind of get what he's saying. You know where he stands. And I think that was a part of that whole dynamic of how we communicate to people in a way that they get it.
Mm. Simple, but fascinating, exactly. And something to keep an eye out for. Just so folks know, you know, we at AARP, we don't choose our elected leaders, but we work with whoever the American people choose to lead us. And so we look forward to working with all of these folks. Congrats to all of the winners. You can bet to be hearing more from AARP North Carolina as we continue our work into next year. Brian, always a pleasure having you.
Thank you.
Look forward to having you back again at some time. Again, Brian's podcast is Do Politics Better. That is a wrap, folks. Thank you to Brian for being with us. Thank you for listening. Thank you to Jason Kong for production. This has been AARP Without Limits. I'm Mike Olander with AARP North Carolina. We'll see you next time.